You're holding on to a lot of anger from your childhood, and unless you find some way to let it go, or at least deal with it in a healthy way, I'm afraid you won't make any progress at all. I can't be the one to give you these tools. I caused you all this pain to begin with, and in your angrier moments, you doubt what I had to say, even if it was helpful. So coming here was a waste of time, then? There's nothing you can do. I knew I should have hit the bar. I could be on my second whiskey and coke by now. It wasn't a waste of time. It was a really big step in your efforts to become a better person. He makes eye contact with me again, and I can literally taste the whiskey that I should be drinking right now instead of having this conversation. She'll be so proud of you, he adds. Proud? Why the hell would anyone be proud of me? Shocked that I'm here, maybe, but proud? No. She called me a drunk, I confess without thinking. Is she right? He asks, concern clear on his face. I don't know. I don't think I am, but I don't know. If you don't know you're a drunk, you may want to find out the answer before it becomes too late. I study my father's face and can see real fear for me behind his eyes. He has the fear maybe I should have. Why did you start drinking in the first place? I probe. I've always wanted to know the answer to that question, but I've never really felt like I could ask. He sighs, and his hand moves up to smooth his short hair. Well, your mum and I weren't at the best place at the time, and the downward spiral started when I left one night and got drunk. By drunk, I mean I couldn't even walk home. But I found that I liked the way I felt, immobile or not. It numbed me to all the pain I was feeling, and it became a habit after that. I spent more time at that damned bar across the street than I did with you and her. It got to the point where I couldn't function without the liquor, but I wasn't really functioning with it either. It was a losing battle. I don't remember anything before my father became a drunk. I had always assumed he was like that since before I was born. What was so painful that you were trying to escape? That's not important. What's important is that I finally woke up one day and got sober. After you left us, I remind him. Yes, son. After I left you both. You both were better off without me. I was in no position to be a father or a husband. Your mum did an excellent job raising you. I wish she hadn't had to do it alone, but it turned out better than with me around. Anger churns and heats inside me, and I press my fingers into the armrests of the chair. But you can be a husband to Karen and a father to Landon. There. I said it. I have so much fucking resentment toward this man who was a drunk asshole my entire life, who fucked up my life, but who manages to remarry and take on a new son and new life. Not to mention he's rich now, and we didn't have shit while I was growing up. Karen and Landon have everything that my mum and I should have had. I know it seems that way, Harden, but it's not true. I met Karen 2 years after I stopped drinking. Landon was already 16, and I wasn't trying to be a father figure to him. He didn't grow up with a man in the house either, so he was quick to embrace me. It wasn't my intention to have a new family and replace you. I could never replace you. You never wanted anything to do with me, and I don't blame you for that. But son, I spent most of my life living in the dark, a blinding, desolate darkness. And Karen was my light, the way Tessa is for you. My heart nearly stops at the mention of Tessa. I was so lost in reliving my shitty childhood that I was able to stop thinking about her for a moment. I couldn't help but be happy and grateful that Karen came into my life, Landon included. Ken continues, I'd give anything to have a relationship with you the way I do with him. Maybe one day that could happen. I can see that my father is out of breath after his long confession, and I'm left speechless. I've never had this type of conversation with him, or with anyone in my life but Tessa. She always seems to be the exception. I don't know what to say to him. I don't forgive him for fucking up my life and choosing liquor over my mum. But I meant what I said about trying to forgive him. If I don't, I'll never be able to be normal. Really, I'm not even sure I'll ever be able to be normal anyway. But I want to be able to go a week without breaking something, or someone. The humiliation on Tessa's face when I told her to leave the apartment is clear in my mind. But instead of fighting it like I always do, I embrace it. I need to be reminded of what I did to her. No more hiding from the consequences of my actions. "You haven't said anything," my dad says, interrupting my thoughts. The image of Tessa's face begins to fade, and though I try to hang on to it, it slips away. The only comfort I have is in knowing that it'll be back to haunt me soon enough. I don't really know what the hell to say. This has been a lot for me. I don't know what to think, I admit. The honesty in my words terrifies me, and I wait for him to make shit awkward. But he doesn't. He just nods in agreement and stands to his feet.
Karen is making a late dinner, if you want to stay.
No, I'll pass, I groan. I want to go home. The only problem with home is that Tessa isn't there. And that's my own damn fault. I ran into Landon in the hallway as I was leaving, but I ignored him and left before he could try to force his unsolicited advice on me. I should have asked him where Tessa was. I'm desperate to know. But I also know myself, and that I'd show up wherever she is and try to convince her to leave with me. I need to be with her, wherever she is. Listening to my dad's explanation of why he was such a shitty father to me was a step in the right direction. But I'm not miraculously going to be able to stop being a controlling bastard all of a sudden. And if Tessa is somewhere that I don't want her to be, like with Zed, for example. Is she with Zed? Holy shit, would she be with him? I don't think so. But it's not like I've given her the option of having many friends. And if she isn't with Landon... No, she's not with Zed. She's just not. I continue to convince myself of this as I ride the elevator up to our apartment. Half of me hopes that whoever the asshole was that broke into our apartment is back now. I could really use an outlet for my mounting anger. A chill runs down my back and over my entire body. What if Tessa had been home alone when the intruder broke in? The image of her flushed, tear-stained face from my nightmares flashes in front of me, and my body goes rigid. If anyone ever tried to hurt her, it would be the last thing they ever fucking did. I'm such a fucking hypocrite. Here I am, threatening to kill someone for hurting her, when that's all I seem capable of doing. After grabbing some water and looking around the empty apartment for a few minutes, I start to get antsy. To keep myself busy, I sort through Tessa's book collection. She left too many behind, and I know it killed her to do so. Just more evidence of how toxic I am. A leather notebook hidden between two different editions of Emma catches my eye, and I run my fingers along the clasp. Pulling it out, I sift through the pages to find that Tessa's handwriting fills each page. Is this some sort of diary that I didn't know she was keeping? Introduction to World Religion is written neatly on the first page. I sit down on the bed with the book in my hands and begin to read.
Chapter 56, Tessa. Logan calls to me from the other side of the kitchen, but when it's clear I can't hear him, he walks over to me.
"It was cool of you to come. I wasn't sure if you were going to,"
he says with a big smile. "I wouldn't miss my own going-away party," I say, tilting the red cup in my shaky hands as a sort of toast.
"I've missed you around here. No one has choked Molly in a while."
He laughs and tips his head back, pouring clear liquor straight from the bottle down his throat. He swallows it down, blinks, then clears his throat, shaking his head in a way that makes me cringe at the thought of how bad that had to burn.
"You'll always be my hero for that,"
he teases and offers the bottle to me. I shake my head and hold up the half-empty cup in my hand. I'm sure it won't be long until someone else comes along and does it again. I take a moment to smile at the thought.
"Uh-oh, speak of the devil,"
Logan says, his eyes focused behind me. I don't want to turn around. "Why?" I quietly groan, leaning one elbow on the counter. When Logan playfully offers me the bottle again, I accept it.
"Drink up."
He smiles and walks away, leaving me with the bottle. Molly comes into my line of vision and lifts her red cup to me in greeting. "As sad as I am that you're moving away," she says, her voice deceptively soft and sweet, "I'm glad I won't have to see you again. I'll miss Harden, though. The things that boy can do with his tongue." I roll my eyes at her while I try to think of a comeback, but fail. Jealousy runs like ice through my veins, and I contemplate choking her again right here, right now. "Oh, go away," I eventually say, and she laughs. It's a hideous noise, really. "Oh, come on, Tessa. I was your first enemy at college. That counts for something, right?" She winks and bumps her hip into mine as she walks past me. This party was a terrible idea. I knew better than to come to this place, especially without Harden. Steph has disappeared, and while Logan was nice enough to keep me company for a minute, he's since found a more available girl to occupy himself with. When I first see the girl, she's in profile, and she looks preppy and wholesome. But when she turns and I glimpse her from the front, I'm shocked to see that the other half of her face is full of tattoos. Ouch! I begin to wonder if they're actually permanent as I pour a little more liquor into my cup. I plan to nurse this drink all night and sip it very slowly. Otherwise, the facade that I've been struggling to hold up will crumble and fall, and I'll end up being that annoying drunk girl who cries every time someone looks at her. I force myself to walk a slow lap around the house in search of Steph's crimson hair, but she's nowhere to be found. When I finally spot Nate's familiar face, I see he, too, is working on some girl, and I don't want to interrupt. I feel so out of place here. Not just because I don't exactly fit in with this crowd, but because I have this feeling that even though this party was labeled as our going-away party, I don't get the sense that anyone here actually cares if Harden and I disappear. Perhaps they'd show more interest if Harden had actually come along with me. He is their friend, after all. After sitting alone at the kitchen counter for nearly an hour, I finally hear Steph's voice exclaim, "There you are!" By this point, I've eaten an entire bowl of pretzels, and I'm up to two drinks. I've been debating whether to call a cab or not, but now that Steph has finally surfaced again, I'll try to hang in a little longer. Tristan, Molly, and Dan are behind her, and I do my best to keep a neutral expression. I miss Harden. "I thought you left or something," I call over the music, distracting myself from thoughts of how wrong it feels to be here without Harden. For the past hour, I'd been battling myself to stay away from his old bedroom upstairs. I want to go in there so badly, to hide from the uncomfortable mass of people, to reminisce. I don't know. I keep finding my gaze gravitating toward the stairs, and it's killing me slowly.
"No way. I got you a drink."
Steph smiles and takes the cup that's already in my hand. She replaces it with an identical one filled with pink liquid.
"Cherry vodka sour, duh,"
she squeals at my confusion, and I force an awkward laugh out while I raise the cup to my lips.
"To your last party with us,"
Steph cheers, and multiple strangers lift their cups in the air. Molly looks away as I tilt my head back and allow the sweet cherry flavoring to flood my mouth. "Talk about good timing," Molly says to Steph, and I turn around quickly. I can't decide if I want the person who's just arrived to be Harden or not, but my dilemma is settled for me when Zed walks into the kitchen dressed in all black. My mouth falls open slightly, and I turn back to Steph. "You said he wouldn't be here. The last thing I need right now is another reminder of the mess I've made of my life. I said my goodbyes to Zed already, and I'm not prepared to reopen the wounds that came from being friends with him."
"Sorry," she says with a shrug. "He just showed up. I didn't know."
She leans into Tristan. I give her a look emboldened by alcohol. "Are you sure this party is even for me?" I know I sound ungrateful, but the fact that Steph has invited Zed and Molly really bothers me. If Hardin had come, he'd have lost it for sure when Zed entered the kitchen. Of course it is. Look, I'm sorry he's here. I'll tell him to stay away from you, she assures me and begins to walk towards Zed, but I grab her arm. No, don't. I don't want to be mean. It's fine. Zed is in conversation with a blonde girl who follows him farther into the kitchen. He's smiling down at her as she laughs, but when he looks up and notices my presence, his smile fades. His eyes dart to Steph and Tristan, but they both avoid his gaze and leave the room with Molly and Dan in tow. Once again, I'm left alone. I watch as Zed leans down and says something in the blonde's ear, after which she smiles and walks away from him.
Hey.
He smiles awkwardly and shifts on his feet when he reaches me. Hey. I take another sip from my cup.
I didn't know you'd be here,
we say in unison, and then laugh uncomfortably. He grins and says,
You first.
I'm relieved that he doesn't seem to be holding a grudge against me. I was just saying that I had no idea you were coming.
And I had no idea that you were coming either.
I thought so. Steph keeps saying that this is some kind of going-away party for me, but I'm positive now that she was just saying it to be nice. I take another sip. The cherry vodka sour is much stronger than the other two drinks I had.
You're here with Steph?
He asks, closing the space between us. Yeah, Hardin isn't here, if that's what you're wondering.
No, I...
His eyes move to my hand as I place the empty cup on the counter.
What is that?
Cherry vodka sour. Ironic, isn't it? I say, but he doesn't laugh. Which surprises me, given they're his favorite drink. Instead, his face twists in confusion as he looks from my face back down to the cup and up to my face again.
Did Steph give you that?
His tone is serious. Too serious. And my mind is slow. Too slow. Yeah. So?
Fuck.
He snatches the cup from the counter.
Stay here,
he commands, and I nod slowly. I notice that my head is starting to feel kind of heavy. I try to focus on Zed as he disappears from the kitchen, but I find myself distracted by the way the lights above my head seem to be spinning round and round. The lights are so pretty, so distracting in the way they're dancing on people's heads. The lights dancing? They do dance. I should dance. No, I should sit down. I lean into the counter and focus on the warped wall, the way it curves and twists, blending into the lights that shine on people's heads. Or are they shining on the people who are dancing? Either way, it's pretty, and disorienting as well. And the truth is that I'm not sure what's actually happening.
Chapter 57. Hardin. Scanning through the pages of the little notebook, I'm having a hard time deciding where to start reading. It's a journal from Tessa's religion class. It took me a minute to figure out what the hell it was, because despite the title on the front, each entry is labeled with a word and a date, most of them having nothing to do with religion. It's also less structured than the essays I've seen Tessa write, a little more stream of conscious. Pain. The word catches my eye, and I begin to read. Does pain turn people away from their God? If so, how? Pain can turn anyone away from just about anything. Pain is capable of causing you to do things you would never consider doing, such as blaming God for your unhappiness. Pain. Such a simple word, but so packed with meaning. I have come to learn that pain is the strongest emotion one can feel. Unlike every other emotion, it's the only one every human being is guaranteed to feel at some point in their life, and there is no upside to pain, no positive aspect that can make you look at it from a different perspective. There's only the overwhelming sensation of pain itself. Lately, I've become very well acquainted with pain. The ache has become nearly unbearable. Sometimes, when I'm alone, which is more often than not as of recently, I find myself trying to decide which type of pain is worse. The answer isn't as simple as I thought it would be. The slow and steady aching pain, the type of pain that comes when you've been hurt repeatedly by the same person, yet here you are. Here I am, allowing the pain to continue. It never ends. only in those rare moments when he pulls me to his chest and makes promises that he never seems able to keep, does the pain disappear. Just as I get used to the freedom, my freedom from my self-inflicted pain, it returns with another blow. This doesn't have a damn thing to do with religion. This is about me. I have decided that the hot, burning, inescapable pain is the worst. This pain comes when you finally begin to relax. You finally breathe, thinking that some issue is yesterday's problem, when in fact it's today's problem, tomorrow's problem, and the problem of every day after that. This pain comes when you pour everything into something, into someone, and they betray you so completely, so seemingly on a whim, that the pain crushes you, and you feel as if you're barely breathing, barely holding on to that small fraction of whatever is left inside of you, begging you to go on, to not give up. Fuck. Sometimes it's faith that people hold on to. Sometimes, if you're lucky enough, you can confide in someone else and trust them to pull you out of the pain before you dwell in it for too long. Pain is one of those hideous places that, once visited, you have to fight your way out, and even when you think you have escaped it, you find that it has permanently marked you. If you're like me, you don't have anyone to depend on. No one to take your hand and assure you that you'll make it through this hell. Instead, you have to lace up your boots, grab your own hand, and pull yourself out. My eyes moved to the date at the top of the page. This was written while I was in England. I shouldn't read any more. I should just put the damn book down and never open it again. But I can't. I have to know what else was written in this book of secrets. I fear this is the closest to her I will fucking get anymore. I turn to another page labelled Faith. What does faith mean to you? Do you have faith in something higher? Do you believe that faith can bring good things to people's lives? This should be better. This entry shouldn't twist the knife and worsen the ache in my chest. This one couldn't be related to me. To me, faith means believing in something other than yourself. I don't believe that any two people can possibly hold the same view on faith, whether their only faith is religion-based or not. I do believe in something higher. I was raised that way. My mother and I went to church every single Sunday, and most Wednesdays too. I don't go to church now, which I probably should do, but I'm still deciding how I feel about my religious faith, now that I'm an adult and no longer obliged to do what my mother expects me to do. When I think about faith, my mind doesn't automatically go to religion. It probably should, but it doesn't. It goes to him. Everything does. He is my every thought. I'm not entirely sure if that's a good thing, but that's the way it is. And I have faith that it will work out for us in the end. Yes, he's difficult and overprotective, sometimes even controlling. Okay, he's often controlling. But I have faith in him, that he means well, no matter how frustrating his actions. My relationship with him tests me in ways that I never thought imaginable. But every second is worth it. I truly believe that one day his deep fear of losing me will dissolve, and we will embrace our future together. That's all I want. I know he wants it too, though he would never say so. I have so much faith in that man that I will take every single tear, every single pointless argument. I'll take it all just to be around to see him on the day when he's able to have faith in himself. Meanwhile, I have faith that one day Harden will say what he feels openly and honestly, finally putting an end to his self-imposed exile from feeling things and dealing with them in the way that he should, that one day he will finally see that he isn't a villain. He tries so hard to be one, but deep down he's really a hero. He's been my hero. My tormentor at times, but mostly my hero. He saved me from myself. I spent my life pretending to be someone I wasn't, and Harden has shown me that it's okay to be myself. I'm no longer conforming to my mother's idea of who I am and who I'm supposed to be becoming, and I thank him dearly for helping me to get to this point. I believe that one day he will see how truly incredible he is. He's so incredibly perfectly imperfect, and I love him so much for that. He may not show the heroism inside him the conventional way, but he tries, and that's all I can ask for. I have faith that if he continues to try, he will finally allow himself to be happy. I will continue to have faith in him until he has it in himself. I close the book and pinch the bridge of my nose in an attempt to control my emotions. Tessa believes in me for no damn reason. I'll never understand why she wasted her time on me in the first place. But reading her unedited thoughts this way twists the knife in my chest, pulls it out, and then impales me with its blade once more. The realization that Tessa is just like me both frightens and thrills me at the same time, knowing that everything in her world revolved around me makes me happy, even giddy. But when I'm reminded that I fucking blew it, the happiness disappears just as fast as it came. I owe it to her and to myself to be better. I owe it to her to try to let go of my anger. Oddly enough, I feel as if a weight has been lifted from my shoulders since my awkward conversation with my father. I wouldn't go as far as to say that all the ugly, hurtful memories are forgiven, or that we'll suddenly become pals, watching sports together on TV and shit. But I do hate him less than I did before. I'm more like my father than I care to admit. I've tried to leave Tessa for her own good, but I have yet to be strong enough to do it. So, in a way, he's stronger than me. He actually left and didn't come back. If I had a child with Tessa and I knew I would fuck up their lives, I would want to leave too. Fuck that. The thought of having a child makes me nauseous. I would be the worst possible father, and Tessa really would be better off on her own. I can't even show her love the way that I should, let alone a child. Enough of that, I say out loud and sigh, rising to my feet. I walk into the kitchen and open a cabinet. The half-empty bottle of vodka on the shelf is calling my name, begging me to open it. I really am a fucking drunk. I'm hovering over the kitchen counter with a fucking bottle of vodka in my hands. I twist the cap off and bring the bottle to my lips. Just one drink will cause the guilt to go away. With one drink, I can force myself to pretend Tessa will be home soon. It's worked before to numb the pain, and it will work again. One drink. Just as I close my eyes and tilt my head back, I can see Tessa's teary eyes flashing behind mine. I open my eyes, turn on the sink faucet, and pour the vodka down the drain.
Chapter 58. Tessa. Mouths are opening. Lips are moving without sounds, and the music is bouncing off of the walls, rattling my mind. How long have I been standing here? When did I walk into the kitchen? I don't remember.
Hey.
Dan slides in front of me, and I shudder a little where I'm leaning against the counter. His face is a little off-kilter. I stare harder, trying to bring him into focus. Hey. My reply comes so slow. He smiles.
Are you okay?
I nod. I think I do. I feel weird, sort of, I admit, and scan the room for Zed. I hope he comes back soon.
What do you mean?
I don't know, like I feel odd. Like drunk, but slower. But then I have this energy at the same time. I wave my hand in front of my face. I have three hands. Dan laughs.
You must have had a lot to drink.
I nod again, look at the floor, watch a girl cross in front of me at a snail's pace. Is Zed coming back? I ask him. Dan looks around.
Where did he go?
To find stuff about my drink. I lean farther onto the counter. Probably half of my body's on it at this point. I can't really tell.
You did? I can help you find him.
He shrugs.
I think I saw him go upstairs.
Okay, I say. I don't think I like Dan, but I need to find Zed because my head is getting heavier and heavier. I follow slowly behind Dan as he pushes through the crowd and heads toward the stairs. The music is amazingly loud now, and I find my head moving slowly back and forth as I climb the steps. Is he up here? I ask Dan.
Yeah. He just went in here, I think.
He nods his head toward the door across the hall. That's Harden's room, I inform him, and he shrugs. Can I just sit here for a minute? I can't walk anymore, I think. My feet feel heavy, but my mind feels like it's getting sharper, and this makes no sense to me.
Sure, yeah. You can sit in here.
Dan grabs hold of my arm and leads me into Harden's old room. I stumble to the edge of the bed, and memories seem to take shape and swirl in the air around me. Harden and me sitting on the bed, the same spot I'm in now. I kissed him for the first time. I was so overwhelmed and confused by my growing need to be close to him, my dark boy. That was the first time I got a glimpse of the softer, kinder Harden. He didn't stay long, but it was nice to meet him. "Where's Harden?" I ask, looking up at Dan. An expression crosses his face, then disappears as he chuckles.
"Oh, Harden isn't here. And you said you were sure he wasn't coming, remember?"
He closes the door and locks it behind him. What's going on? My mind reels with the possibilities, but my body feels too heavy to move. I want to lie down, but an alarm is screeching through my head, telling me to fight it. Don't lie down. Keep your eyes open. Oh, open the door, I say, and try to stand, but the room begins to spin. As if on cue, there's a knock at the door. Relief floods over me when Dan unlocks the door and it opens to reveal Steph. Steph, I moan. He's doing something. I don't know how to explain it, but I know he was going to do something. She looks at Dan, who gives her a sinister smile. Looking back at me, she asks simply,
"Doing what?"
Steph. I call for her again. I need her to help me leave this haunted room.
Stop whining, she snaps, and I lose my breath.
What? I manage to say. But Steph just smiles up at Dan while she digs her hand through the bag she's brought in. When I moan again, she stops and glares at me.
God, do you ever shut up? I'm so sick of hearing you bitch and complain all the damn time.
My brain isn't working correctly. Steph can't be saying these things to me. She rolls her eyes.
Ugh, and that stupid, innocent pout? Like, give it a fucking rest already.
After a couple more seconds of digging, she says,
Found it. Here.
And she hands a small object to Dan. I almost fade out, but a little beep brings me back to consciousness. For at least a few more seconds, I see a little red light, like a teeny tiny cherry. Like the cherry vodka sour. Steph, Dan, Molly, Zed. The party. Oh no. What did you do? I ask her, and she laughs again.
Didn't I tell you to stop whining? You'll be fine.
She groans and walks toward the bed. There's a camera in Dan's hand. The red light shows that it's on. Get away from me, I try to yell, but it comes out a mere whisper. I try to stand to my feet, but I stumble back to the bed. It's soft, like quicksand. I thought you... I begin, but Steph puts her hands on my shoulders and pushes me back against the mattress. I can't get back up.
You thought what? I was your friend?
She kneels on the bed, hovering over me. Steph's fingers grip the bottom of my dress and begin to pull it up my thighs.
You were too busy being a whore going back and forth between Zed and Harden to realize that I've actually always despised you. Don't you think if I really gave a shit about you, I would have told you that Harden was only dating you to win a bet? Don't you think a friend would have warned you?
She's right. And once again, my idiocy is glaringly obvious. The sting of betrayal is multiplied by the fuzziness in my head. And when I look at Steph now, the red-haired devil, her face is twisted, distorted in the most evil way imaginable, and the glow of her dark eyes sends a chill through me.
Oh, and by the way,
she laughs,
I hope you had fun waiting on Hardin to show up on his birthday. Amazing what I can do with one little text. So a video camera must be so much worse, huh?
I try to fight her off, but it's impossible. She easily removes my fingers from where I've dug them into her arms and continues pulling on my dress. I close my eyes and imagine Hardin bursting through the door to rescue me, my knight in black armor. Hardin will find... out, I threaten weakly.
Ha ha, yeah, that's the point. Now stop talking.
Another knock sounds at the door, and again I pointlessly try to push her off of me.
Close the door, hurry,
Dan says, and when I crane my neck toward the door, I'm not surprised to find that Molly has joined us.
Help me get her dress off,
Steph says. My eyes flutter, and I try to shake my head, but it doesn't work. Nothing works. Dan is going to force himself on me, I know it. This was Steph's plan for this party. It was never meant to be a going-away party for me. It was meant to destroy me. I have no idea why I ever thought she was my friend. Molly's hair falls onto my face when she climbs onto the bed next to me, and Steph pushes me up and rolls over to get better access to the back of my dress. Why? My voice is broken, and I'm vaguely aware of the tears on my cheeks now wetting the sheets on the bed.
Why?
Dan echoes, bringing his face close to mine.
Why? Your asshole boyfriend taped himself fucking my sister. That's why.
His warm breath on my face feels like mud.
Whoa, Molly says loudly. I thought you said you were only taking some pictures of her.
We are, and maybe a little video. Steph responds.
No way. Hell no, dude. You can't have him rape her, Molly shouts.
He's not. Jesus, I'm not, like, psychotic. He's just going to touch her and make it look like they're fucking so that when Hardin sees the tape, he'll fucking lose it. Just picture his face when he sees his innocent little whore of a girlfriend getting fucked by Dan.
Steph laughs.
I thought you were into this.
She hisses at Molly.
You said you were.
I'm into pissing him off, but you can't tape this shit. Molly is whispering, but I can hear her clear as day.
You sound like her.
Steph turns me back over after removing my dress completely.
Stop, I whimper.
Steph rolls her eyes, and Molly looks like she might vomit any second. I don't know about this anymore, Molly says, panicked. Steph grabs her shoulder viciously and points.
Well, there's the door, then. If you're going to be a pussy about it, go downstairs, and we'll join you in a few.
Another knock at the door, and I hear Tristan's voice.
Steph, are you in there?
He says through the wood. Not him, too.
Shit,
Steph mutters.
Yeah, I'm talking to Molly. Be out in a minute.
I open my mouth to scream, but her hand clamps down over my face to silence me. It's sticky and smells like alcohol. I try to look at Molly for help, but she turns away. Coward.
Go downstairs, babe. I'll be right there. She's upset. Girl stuff, you know?
She lies. And despite all of this mess, I can't help but be relieved that Tristan seems oblivious to his cruel girlfriend's intentions.
Okay,
he shouts.
Come over here,
Steph quietly instructs Dan. Then she touches my cheek.
Open your eyes.
They open, barely, and I feel Dan's hand trail up my thigh. Fear shoots through me and I close them again. I'm going downstairs, Molly finally says when Dan brings the small camera in front of his face.
Fine, lock the door,
Steph snaps.
Move over,
Dan says, and the bed shifts under me when Steph climbs off and he takes her place.
You hold it.
I try my hardest to replace Dan's hands with Hardin's in my mind, but it's impossible. Dan's hands are soft, too soft, and I try my hardest to replace them with something, anything. I picture the softest blanket that I had as a child touching my skin. The door closes, signaling Molly's exit, and I whimper again. He's going to hurt you, I choke, keeping my eyes tightly closed.
Nah, he won't,
Dan replies.
He'll want to make sure no one sees this, so he won't do shit.
His fingers trace along the top of my panties, and he whispers to me,
This is the way the world works.
I gather up all the strength I can and try to throw him off me, but I only manage to make the bed shake a little. Steph laughs some evil sound.
Harden is a dick, okay?
She yells, putting the camera in my face.
And he's always fucking with people. He fucked with Dan's sister. He fucked with me. He led so many girls on, fucked them, then tossed them aside. Until you, that is. Why he likes you so much will never make any sense to me.
Her tone is full of disgust.
Tessa!
Zed's voice booms from somewhere, and Steph covers my mouth again as I hear pounding at the door.
Keep quiet, she commands.
I try to bite her hand. She reaches over and slaps me across the face, but fortunately I barely feel it.
Open the fucking door, Steph. Let me in,
Zed shouts. Is he in on this too? Was Harden right about him? Is everyone around me trying to hurt me? The thought isn't impossible. Nearly everyone I've trusted since coming to college has betrayed me. The names just keep piling up.
I'll break the door. I'm not fucking around. Go get Tristan,
I hear him yell, and Steph immediately removes her hand from my mouth.
Wait,
she yells, going to the door, but it's too late. The door bursts open with a loud crack, and Dan's hand is no longer on me. When I open my eyes, he's backing away from me quickly as Zed strides into the room, his presence filling it.
What the fuck?
He yells, rushing toward me. A blanket is thrown over my body by someone as I try to reach for him. Help me, I beg him, and pray that he isn't involved in this nightmare, that he can actually hear me. He stalks toward Steph and grabs the small camera from her hands.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Dropping it to the ground, he stomps on it repeatedly.
Chill out, dude. It was a joke,
she says, and crosses her arms in front of her just as Tristan enters the room.
A joke? You put something in her drink and you're up here with a video camera while Dan tries to fucking rape her. That's not a goddamn joke.
Tristan's mouth falls open.
What?
Ever the manipulator, Steph points an accusatory finger at Zed and starts crying on command.
Don't listen to him.
Zed shakes his head.
No, man. It's true. Go ask Jace. She asked him for a benzo, and now look at Tessa. The camera they were using is right there.
He points to the ground. Holding the blanket against me, I try to sit up again. I fail.
It was a prank. No one was going to hurt her, Steph says with a fake chuckle that seems meant to hide her maliciousness.
But Tristan looks at his girlfriend in horror.
How could you do that to her? I thought she was your friend.
No, no, baby. It's not as bad as it seems. It was Dan's idea.
Dan throws his arms up, also wanting to avoid blame.
What the fuck? No, it wasn't my idea. It was yours.
He points to Steph and looks at Tristan.
She has a fucked up obsession with Harden. It was her idea.
Shaking his head, Tristan turns to leave the room, but seems to change his mind as he swings his fist through the air, connecting with Dan's jaw. Dan crumples to the floor, and Tristan makes toward the door again. Steph starts after him.
Get away from me. We're done,
he yells, and disappears. Circling, looking at everyone in the room, she yells,
Thanks a fucking lot.
I want to laugh at the irony of her planning this horror show, then blaming everyone else when it backfires in her face. And were I not lying here, catching my breath, I would laugh. Zed's face hovers above mine.
Tessa, are you okay?
No, I admit, feeling dizzier than ever. At first it was only my body that was slow. My mind was clouded only slightly, but now I can feel it becoming more and more affected by the drug.
I'm sorry I left you alone. I should have known better.
After Zed tucks the blanket more tightly around me, one of his arms hooks under my legs and the other settles across my back and he lifts me from the bed. He starts carrying me out of the room, but he stops in front of Dan, who is just picking himself up off the floor.
I hope when Harden finds out about what you did, he fucking kills you. You deserve it.
I'm slightly aware of all the gasps and whispers going on around me as Zed carries me through the crowded house. I don't care, though. I just want to escape from this place and never look back.
What the hell?
I recognize Logan's voice.
Can you go upstairs and get her dress and purse?
Zed asks quietly.
Yeah, sure, man.
Logan responds. Zed backs through the front door and cold air hits me, making me shiver. At least, I think I'm shivering, but I can't really tell. Zed tries to tighten the blanket around me, but it keeps slipping. I'm not any help since I can barely move my arms.
I'm going to call Harden as soon as I get you into my truck, okay?
Zed says. No, don't. I groan. Harden will be so mad at me. The last thing I want is to be screamed at when I can barely keep my eyes open.
Tessa, I really think I should call him.
Please, no. I begin to cry again. Harden is the only person I want to see right now, but I don't want to know how he'll react when he finds out what happened. If he had been the one to show up instead of Zed, what would he have done to Dan and Steph? Something that would have landed him in jail, I'm sure. Don't tell him, I say again. None of it. Shh.
He'll find out anyway. Even with the video destroyed, too many people know what happened.
No, please. I hear Zed's frustrated sigh as he shifts my body into one arm so he can pull the passenger door of his truck open. Logan comes back as Zed places me on the cold seat.
Here's her stuff. Is she okay?
He asks with obvious concern.
Yeah, I think so. She's on benzo. What the hell? It's a long story. Have you ever taken it?
Zed asks.
Yeah, once, but only half, and I passed out after an hour. You better hope she doesn't start hallucinating. Some people have crazy reactions to that stuff. Shit.
Zed groans, and I can picture him twisting his lip ring between his fingers.
Does Harden know?
Logan asks.
Not yet.
The two of them continue to discuss me as if I'm not there, but I'm relieved when the heater in the truck finally shifts from blowing cold air to warm.
I need to get her home,
Zed finally says, and within seconds he's in the truck next to me. Looking at me with a worried expression, Zed says,
If you don't want me to tell him, where do you want to go? You can come to my place, but you know how pissed he'll be when he finds out.
If I could form an actual sentence, I'd tell him about our breakup. But since I can't, I make a sound that is something between a cry and a cough. Mother, I manage.
You're sure?
Yes. No, Harden. Please, I breathe. He nods, and the truck begins to move down the street. I try to focus on Zed's voice as he talks on the phone, but in my attempts to remain sitting up straight, I lose track of what he said, and within minutes, I'm lying across the seat. Giving up, I just close my eyes.
Chapter 59. Harden. Love is the single most important emotion one can hold. Whether it's your love for God or your love for another, it's the most powerful, overwhelming, incredible experience. The moment when you realize that you are capable of loving someone else more than yourself is quite possibly the most important moment in your life. It was for me, anyway. I love Harden more than myself, more than anything. My phone vibrates on the coffee table for the fifth time in the last 2 minutes. I finally decide to answer it so I can tell her off. What the fuck do you want? I bark into the speaker.
It's...
Spit it out, Molly. I don't have time for your shit.
It's about Tessa.
I stand to my feet and the journal falls to the floor. My blood is ice cold. What the hell are you talking about?
She's... Look, don't freak out, but Steph slipped her something and Dan is...
Where are you?
The frat house.
She barely gets the words out before I hang up the phone, grab my keys, and rush out of the apartment. My heart is pounding out of my chest the entire drive. Why the fuck did I get an apartment so far from the campus? This is hands down the longest 20-mile drive of my life. Steph fucking slipped something to Tessa. What the fuck is wrong with her? And Dan. Fucking Dan is a dead man if he lays one goddamn finger on her. I run every single red light and ignore the resulting flashes that indicate I'll be getting at least 4 tickets in the mail.
It's Tessa.
Molly's voice plays over and over in my mind until I finally reach the old frat house. I don't bother turning off my car. My car is the least of my concerns right now. Crowds of drunken idiots litter the living room and hallways as I push my way through the downstairs in search for Tessa. My hands wrap around Nate's collar the moment I see him, and I slam him into the wall without a thought.
Where is she?
I don't know. I haven't seen her. He shouts, and I loosen my grip. Where the fuck is Steph? I demand. She's in the backyard, I think. I haven't seen her in a while. I let go of him with a shove, and he stumbles forward with a glare at me. I stalk out to the backyard in a panic. If Tessa is out there in the cold with Steph and Dan... Steph's red hair is bright in the darkness, and I don't hesitate to grab her collar and lift her from the ground by the back of her leather coat. She starts swatting her arms behind her.
What the fuck?
Where is she? I growl, keeping my fist full of the leather.
I don't know. You tell me.
She spits, and I turn her around to face me.
Where the fuck is she? You won't do shit to me.
I wouldn't doubt me if I were you. Tell me where the fuck Tessa is.
Now!
I scream in her face. Steph flinches, and her bravado falters for a moment before she shakes her head.
I don't know where the hell she is, but she's probably passed out by now.
You're a sick, disgusting bitch. If I were you, I would leave this place before I find Tessa. Once I know she's okay, there won't be anything stopping me from coming after you. For a moment, I consider the idea of hurting Steph, but I know I couldn't actually do it. I can't imagine Tessa's reaction if I laid a hand on a woman, even an evil one like Steph. I turn on my heel and head inside. I don't have time to play games.
Where's Dan Hurd?
I ask a random blonde girl I see sitting alone at the bottom of the stairs.
Him?
She asks, pointing a painted fingernail toward the top of the stairs. I don't respond, but just run over and take the stairs two at a time. Dan isn't aware of my presence until I've tackled him to the ground, knocking over a couple other people along the way. I flip him over and pin him beneath me, closing my hands around his neck. Deja fucking vu.
Where the fuck is Tessa?
I tighten my grip. Dan's face is already turning a nice shade of pink, and he makes a pathetic choking sound instead of answering. I clamp my fingers tighter.
If you hurt her in any goddamn way, I will beat every last breath from your body!
I curse. He kicks his feet, and I look up at the guy he was standing with.
Where is Tessa Young?
I ask the kid, who just raises his hands in surrender.
I don't know her, man, I swear!
The pussy yells, backing away as I continue to strangle his friend. Dan's face has turned from pink to purple.
Are you ready to tell me?
I ask. He nods frantically.
Fucking talk!
I shout, letting go of him.
She's... Zed...
He manages to mutter along with a strained and hollow-sounding cough the moment I remove my hands from his neck.
Zed!
My vision goes black as all my fears suddenly materialize.
He put you up to this, didn't he?
No, Zed didn't have anything to do with it,
Molly says, stepping out from one of the rooms along the hallway.
He didn't. I mean, he heard Steph talking about doing something, but I don't think he thought she was serious.
I look at Molly with wild eyes.
Where is she? Where's Tessa?
I ask for the 100th time. Each second that I don't see her, each moment that I'm not assured of her safety, is another blow to my rapidly dwindling sanity.
I don't know. I think she left with Zed.
What did they do to her? Tell me everything, now!
I stand to my feet and leave Dan on the ground running his hands over his neck as he tries to catch his breath. Molly shakes her head.
They didn't do anything. He stopped them before they could.
He?
Zed. I went down and got him and Tristan before anything could happen. Steph was being so fucking crazy, like she was going to have Dan rape Tessa or something. She says she was only going to make it look that way. But I don't know. She was acting like a psycho.
Rape Tessa?
I choke out.
No. Did he touch her?
A little,
she says sadly and looks at the ground. I look back down at Dan, who is sitting up now. My boot collides with his cheek, and he drops back to the floor immediately.
Holy shit! You're going to kill him!
Molly shrieks.
Like you give a fuck!
I snap at her and try to gauge just how hard I would have to kick him to permanently indent his skull. Blood trickles down his cheek and out of the corner of his mouth. Good.
I don't give a fuck about any of this, actually.
Then why did you call me?
I thought you hate Tessa.
I do, trust me. But I can't sit there and let someone rape her.
Well, I almost thank her. But I quickly remember what a bitch she is. So I just nod and walk away to find Tessa. Why was Zed here in the first place? That motherfucker always seems to show up at the right time. The exact moment that will make me look like an asshole. And now, once again, he has saved her. Regardless of my extreme jealousy, I'm so fucking relieved to know she's away from Steph and Dan and their fucking sick plan for revenge against me. This whole ordeal is just another reminder that every single bad thing in Tessa's life stems from me. If I hadn't done that shit to Dan's sister, this never would have happened. Now Tessa is fucking drugged and she's with Zed. Who knows what the fuck he'll try to do with her? This is it. This is what hell feels like. Knowing that she was in this mess because of me. She could have been raped because of me. Just like in my dreams. And I wasn't there to stop her. Just like I wasn't able to stop it from happening to my mum. I hate this. I hate myself so fucking much. I ruin everything and everyone that comes into contact with me. I'm poison. And she's the slowly eroding seraph, holding on to the last bit of herself that I haven't destroyed.
Harden!
Logan meets me at the bottom of the stairs.
Do you know where Tessa and Zed are?
The words taste like acid on my tongue.
They left about 15 minutes ago. I assumed they were going back to your place, he responds.
So she didn't tell anyone about our breakup.
Was she okay?
I ask him, and hold my breath until he responds.
I don't know. She was pretty out of it. They gave her benzo. Fuck!
I tuck up my hair and walk to the front door.
If you hear from Zed before I find them, call me,
I instruct him. Logan nods in agreement, and I run to my car. Thankfully, no one has stolen it. However, someone has taken the opportunity to be a dick and pour a beer down my windshield and leave the empty cup on the hood. Fucking assholes. I give Tessa a call, but end up just muttering into her voicemail.
Answer the phone, please. Please just answer once.
I know she probably isn't capable of answering right now, but Zed could answer the damn phone for her. The thought of her being so incoherent when I'm not around to protect her sickens me. I smash my hands against the steering wheel and peel out onto the street. This is a fucking disaster, and Tessa is with Zed of all people. I don't trust him any more than I do Dan or Steph. That's not entirely true, but I still don't trust him. By the time I get to Zed's apartment, I'm in tears. Literal tears stain and coat my cheeks, reminding me of how big of a fuck-up I really am. I let this happen. I let her get fucking drugged, nearly raped, and humiliated. I should have been there. No one would have dared to try that shit if I had been. She was probably so afraid. I lift my t-shirt up to wipe my traitorous eyes and park in front of Zed's apartment. His truck isn't in the lot. Where the fuck is he? Where is she? I try to call Tessa, then Zed, then Tessa again, but nobody's picking up. If he does something to her while she's passed out, I will do much worse to him than he could ever imagine. Where else would she go? To Landon?
Harden?
Landon's sleepy voice comes through the phone, and I press the speakerphone button. Is Tessa there? He yawns.
No. Is she supposed to be?
No. I can't find her.
Are you?
He stops himself.
Are you okay? Yeah. No, I'm not. I can't find Tessa, and I don't know where else to look.
Does she want to be found? He asks softly. Does she?